My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The COB is brought to you by Pepperstone, trusted by traders in over 160 countries. From Barangaroo Studios, here's what you need to know about the day in business and finance.
Welcome to the COB. I'm Juliette Sali.
And I'm Nadine Blaney. It's wonderful to be here with you on a very rainy Tuesday. Must be said, you can certainly feel the seasons changing outside our studios here in Sydney, but a bit of green on the screen today.
Yeah, and I think that was interesting that we started to see, as you can see there, a bit of a pickup after that retail sales data was released. So a bit, worse than was expected,
yeah.
A fall of 0.4% after that Taylor Swift boost that we saw in February. But we've managed to hold on to those gains for most of the day.
Why? Because some are dialing back their rate hike expectations now, because, of course, that really points to a slowing consumer looking pretty weak out there. And no big surprise, 13 rate hikes in this cycle. I was just reading about today. Obviously,
yeah.
We talk about it so much and you sort of forget, you know, when you zoom out, just how much some people have had to bear in terms of mortgage rates.
Although I was talking to Paul Bloxham from HSBC and he was saying, look, this is such a small part of the overall trade picture because services is still hot. You know
yeah.
that when you go down to get your coffee. I was in Byron over the long weekend, every single coffee shop, every single bar heaving. So are we just cutting back on, you know, buying makeup or clothes, but we're still spending our money, you know, on
yeah.
services, which is pushing into that services inflation.
Yeah, and that's the really sticky inflation that we talk about that we worry about as well. So that sort of fed in the retail sales to equity market performance, but also we did see some relative strength right around the region today. Interesting to note the Hang Seng looking good. We've got some results coming out from HSBC as well. Its share price is up, but, you know, will this continue? Can it continue? We'll be speaking with our special guest, Martin Crabb from Shaw & Partners, about that soon.
Well, I think we've covered the three themes quite nicely there.
Yeah.
Retail route, rates rethink, ASX rises, lots of R's. Let's get into the sectors and have a look at those consumer discretionary stocks after the retail trade data was released. You know, this is a bit of a mixed picture, but Flight Centre there up 0.25%. Harvey Norman, they're up by 0.2%.
You can see, though, JB Hi-Fi down as well as some of these industrial stocks not doing too well overall. Worley is one we'll talk about when we get to the news. But Computershare, presumably, you know, not looking too poorly there. And it also benefits in the higher for longer rate scenario as well, which, of course, don't forget, we've still got major events on the horizon, being the FOMC, the Fed, most notably.
All right, let's quick look at industrials. Let's have a look at healthcare stocks as well. CSL there and Cochlear rising, Ramsay Health under a little bit of pressure, and Cellsonic Health there as well. And just getting to some of the corporate news, I mean, Worley was a really interesting one. At one point, I think it was down something like 12%, looking like it's going to close down about 8%. Its largest shareholder, the Dubai-based infrastructure group Sidara, sold 19% of its shares. That'll do it.
Yeah, Ampol, one of those companies that are out with an update. It's reporting a 21% drop in Lytton refiner margin in the quarter. Its shares coming under pressure to the tune of about 3.3%.
BHP looking good. It reached a $38 billion settlement with the Brazilian government regarding the Samarco dam disaster back in 2015. Also, Anglo under pressure to reveal plans to fend off BHP as Elliott hikes its stake something like, what is it, 39
billion? Yeah, it's just fascinating
to
watch this one.
And the small copper players that you could really see impacted too.
But BHP, you've got to think as well, there's been a lot of selling over the past couple of sessions since that Anglo-American bid has come through. Coal, so another quarterly, this is sales, 3.4% rise in revenue, group sales of just over $10 billion. And, just reading through some of the commentary, so we've got, people eating at home. Coal saying that it wants to work with suppliers to help bring prices down. Of course, these supermarkets are being very careful in their communication around, their revenue.
All right. Well, NAB as well, they're in focus. And
it's just finalizing the sale of that ANZ wealth management business. So that will be adding, $261 million. In gains.
Origin revenue jumping 7%, but its share price finished fairly flat. All right, welcome to the COB, Martin Crabb from Shaw and Partners. Hello. Let's talk about those retail sales, but also I read a really interesting piece, and I want your sort of thought on this, from Stephen Kukula saying, look, even if the RBA raised rates like tenfold from here, it doesn't have an impact on things like petrol, food influenced by weather, all of that that's feeding into that inflationary picture anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the retail sales are interesting. If you dig into the reads, the only thing that was really, really weak was household goods. So spending on travel, spending on going out to restaurants and cafes, spending on clothes, spending on department stores. In fact, clothes are a bit weaker, but just about everything else is okay. And it's just that one area. And you kind of go, well, what's driving that? And it's just household formation, right? So there's no houses being built, despite the massive amount of immigration, there's no houses being built. So that, going out and buying the furniture and all that sort of stuff. So the weakness is really in one part of the economy. The rest of the economy is going along quite nicely. And back to your point about rate hikes, they're very uneven across the economy. We tend to think of aggregates and say, well, okay, there's all this mortgage debt out there, so let's put up interest rates to slow the economy down. But what about the $1 trillion in household deposits that's sitting there? What about the almost $4 trillion now in superannuation that's paying $150 billion in income a year? That's all positively disposed to higher interest rates, right? So there's a lot of money sitting there in at-call accounts. It just gets more money. And so people are going, well, okay, I'm getting a pay rise. So for every saver, there's a dissaver or a lender. And everyone's focused on household debt, but not everyone's focused on household assets. And so, there's a positive economic benefit for higher rates. And one of the reasons economists are struggling with why aren't these rates biting harder, it's all these people out there getting a benefit out of it. So when we're looking at retail, we've really got to think about what are young people spending their money on? They're getting smashed by higher rates. But what are retirees and older people that have paid off the mortgage, what are they spending their money on, and have a two-speed? So we can still buy travel stocks quite happily, even though the economy is slowing down, because that's the area of the market that's getting the spending. Mm.
Two-speed retail economy,
very much so.
Just to keep things simple. All right. So when you look, though, at, you said, the Australian dollar, obviously there's such a dynamic environment in forex markets regardless, but how do you view the Aussie?
Yeah, look, trying to keep it simple because it's incredibly complicated is interest rate differential. So the whole narrative this year has been, oh, the US is done, they're going to cut 7 times and every other currency is going to outperform the US dollar. So let's all go buy, yen if you're really bullish on Japan, and just short the US dollar. And the absolute opposite has happened. We've now got all the rate cuts priced out. And now it's like, well, okay, who's going to hike next? And sort of Australia's fallen into that camp. So we've gone from a situation where we were probably going to be on hold this year and the state was going to cut, states were going to cut aggressively, to the states aren't going to cut at all, but we're going to hike. So I think the reaction of the currency today made a lot of sense because, hey, those retail sales numbers aren't great. They don't look like the economy needs another rate hike. If anything, it's like back to the narrative before. So I think the dollar, very volatile in the short term. Like if we get really strong wages numbers in the US, either in the payroll number or the JOLTS number this week, then it'll be back on the Fed's got a hike. So, the dollar's like in a washing machine between these two sort of interest rate outlooks. And, you know, it's getting buffeted around by every bit of data. We still think the Aussie goes higher because we think that inflation, that interest rate differential will go back the other way. At some point, Aussie interest rates will be above the US interest rates. They probably deserve to be based on the size of our economy and the diversity of our economy. So at the moment, there are about a 1.5% differential. We think that goes back the other way, and that means the Aussie goes up. Having said that, Nadine, we're at 100 yen. Right, so we're over, you know, we've been over 100 yen probably five times in the last 25 years, and then we go back to 50 yen. I'm not saying we're going back to 50 yen, but it's obviously at a higher level. So, you know, viewers out there, if you haven't booked your holiday to Japan, you might want to think about that now.
It's funny because I think you said that to us in January, and now to the dollar at least, pushing past 160. But does that sort of look like that's the, I know you're not a currency specialist, but new resistance level in terms of this potential BOJ intervention?
Yeah, I mean, look, central banks have tried to intervene in currency markets and they're pushing against a piece of string. And we've seen that numerous times in history, going back to the famous George Soros taking on the Bank of England, right? Central banks aren't big enough to take on the currency markets. The currency markets are trillions of dollars a day. So every time a central bank steps into the market, all the hedge funds go the other way and just wait for the current, wait for the banks to run out of money. So I think, you know, rumors about the Bank of Japan stepping in to try and defend the currency is just going to make things worse. It's going to come back to capital flows. It's going to come back to interest rates, and that's what's driving it. So yes, the Bank of Japan has moved away from a zero interest rate policy. It's now got a slightly positive cash rate, but they're not going to close the 5.5% gap on the US dollar anytime soon. So, you know, I think that trade's fraught with danger, that one. Mm.
I had a conversation about Japanese equities earlier this morning with somebody for our Megatrends event. I'll send it to you. Really fascinating. We don't have time to get into that here, get your view on that. But just to some of the news that was out today, Worley, one of the worst performers.
Yeah.
You know, the market reacted very swiftly and severely to the news of this. Was it just completely out of the blue? Or?
Yeah, look, I think anyone who's looked at Worley has looked at the share register and say, what are these guys doing here? This group out of Dubai who made an $11.80 takeover bid for the company back in 2016. We're clearly unsuccessful. The board rejected it and they went, well, bugger you, and they went and bought 25% of the company in a number of tranches, and then have tried unsuccessfully to get together with the board to do some sort of synergy deal. And Woolies always said, look, there's not really in interest of our shareholders to do this. We're just going to go our own merry way. So there's this, you look at the register, there's a 25% shareholder. It kind of doesn't really belong. Either they get the company or they leave. And so that's been an overhang for many, many years, really. The fact that it cleared at such a discount, though, Nadine, it was $14.35. And the book build started at $14.25 in 5 cent increments, so didn't take long to get, you know, to get out. So $14.35. So the upper end of that bid level was $15. So it didn't go near the top, it went near the bottom, because it's a lot of stock for the market to swallow, 19%. Now, why they didn't sell the whole 23.5 is a bit strange. Maybe they didn't have demand for all of that. So what happened today? Anyone who took that stock could flip it out at a profit. So I think the stock opened probably on its lows. People selling stock out at 14.65, 14.70, making 35 cents overnight. It's not bad, right? Mm. But I think people just said this was a $16 stock yesterday. Nothing's changed. It's probably going to go back to a higher level. And so the stock rallied throughout the day. So I think it ended up down about 8% or so. So it's all about, there's nothing wrong with the company. The company hasn't changed at all. It's just this massive block of stock has hit the market and there's a few people just taking a trade on it.
Fundamentally though, do you like Worley?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's difficult to find the renewable transition investment opportunity in Australia. You can't buy wind farms or solar farms or anything like that. So Worley's an engineering company. It's got about 50,000 employees, a lot of whom are engineers. And it's predominantly been oil and gas, but going forward, it's the same skills to do a lot of renewable projects. So we think that Worley's really well placed. It's probably got 10 years of double-digit EPS growth, so we really like it longer term. In fact, if anything, today is probably just an opportunity to have a look at the stock again if you haven't already. So I quite like it for longer-term growth investors.
And a quick word on China. The PMI was beat.
Yeah, well, they come out with two numbers. There's the official one and then the Tai Chin one. And Tai Chin one is broader. The official one was a little bit softer, but the Tai Chin one, which has got more SMEs in it, was stronger. So again, it just comes back to this narrative that China is doing okay. It's not off to the races, but a lot of people thought that their 5% growth target was not going to be achieved this year. 4 months in, it does look like their economy's coming along quite well. So a good number, and probably one of the reasons the Aussie didn't sell off as much when those retail sales numbers came out as the China data came out around about the same time. And so the dollar kind of held up a little bit more than otherwise would have.
Okay, so that gets me thinking about commodities. Mm. And, you know, there's been so much enthusiasm for copper, so much enthusiasm for gold.
Yeah.
Where are you placing your money when it comes to commodities?
Yeah, look, copper feels a little bit crowded trade-like because every single fund manager presentation you go to, they talk about how overweight copper they are and how
and
a high conviction
BHP,
commodity.
You know, wants
and
copper.
BHP's trying to steal Anglo. They probably won't get it, but they're just looking at becoming the world's biggest copper producer. So it's like it's on the front page of every newspaper. It does feel a little bit crowded, not just the commodity itself, Nadine, but all the companies that produce copper have all had a huge run. So we're kind of sitting there with a position in Evolution, having felt pretty good about the bounce it's had from kind of the high twos into the fours. And, you know, is it time to take some of that off the table? Is it time to start looking at lithium, for example, which had a big bounce today because of the deal that BYD and Tesla did with the Chinese government to do more in that space? So it does feel like, you know, iron ore and lithium have gone in one direction and copper and gold have gone in the other. And maybe there's some mean reversion. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it at the moment.
Yeah, because you did name Evolution as your way to play copper and gold together.
Yeah.
Interesting. Keep us updated on that one.
I will do.
Okay. I just thought it would be worthwhile to ask you as well before we let you go. I mean, we've had a couple of positive sessions. I had a chat with Shane Oliver from AMP on Friday. You missed him.
Oh,
he was lovely. But he sort of thought there was a correction, but that we could have seen the correction over. Like, we've hit the bottom. Not saying there wasn't going to be any volatility, but that we've seen the pullback that maybe this market was due for.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that comes back to geopolitics, Nadine. I think we're still nervous about another bout of energy inflation that would cause a little bit of a repeat of what happened, you know, 50 years ago, where we had two crises in the Middle East not far apart, and the damage that did to inflation and therefore what central banks had to do. So there was a little bit of that priced into this sell-off. We sold off about 5 or 6% if you think about from the peak to the trough. And now it's like things look like settling down again in the Middle East. Are they or aren't they? We're a little bit skeptical about that whole thing. We think it makes sense to be cautious on that outlook and therefore have some protection in your portfolio against that going worse. Gold's an obvious one we're speaking about, but energy's another. So I still think that the market's priced for a very strong earnings outlook in America, 11% growth this year, 13% next year. It's kind of hard to see that from a top-down perspective. So I think there's some froth built into valuations, and then we've got this geopolitical thing, which really no one understands, that could cause a bit of a problem. So we're still in correction mode, if you like.
Okay. All right. Let's see where we are next week. Martin, always a pleasure. Martin Crabb from Shaw and
Thank
Partners.
You.
Thank you.
All right. The stock of the day was Coles. We had Michael Gable from Fairmont Equities and Francesco De Stratis from Ord Minnett share their take with Andrew.
Has actually, you know, been underperforming the market over the past 12 months. So you've got a business where they're growing the revenue 6.4% year on year. So earnings is only what, a couple of percent a year. You get about 4% on the divvy plus franking. You could pretty much get that putting it in your offset mortgage. So look, I think that as an investment, it's not that enticing here. I think if you've got a share market that will improve, there'll be other opportunities. So it's not one for me.
So on Coles, we'd be a hold on that. Wouldn't be, throwing it out just for the sake of it. You know, it's a good portfolio stock. We prefer Woolies in that space. Not that I'll be buying Woolies too strongly at the moment anyway.
Yep.
Like Michael said, I think, this sector, the stocks like Coles and Woolies are trading at fairly high multiples. So, it's not the best, if you're looking for growth, it's not the best time to be buying those stocks.
Related, but because of the call, he also has a vacuum cleaner that comes out of his wall. He was talking about gadgets and the technology.
Really?
Yeah. Do Did you know that, that you could have a vacuum?
I did, only because in Canada, a lot of people have, it's called central vac.
Right.
So you don't, this is so random, but you only have a hose and you usually keep it in your basement because everybody has a basement. And so instead of having to drag around the vacuum, you just plug the hose into the wall.
Oh my gosh, the things you learn. All right, let's get to the afterglow's leaders.
I haven't thought about that in years.
Lithium, I mean, this was the big one. IGO as well was Ray David, I believe, came on my 11 hour, in the 11 hour, I should say, and spoke about that. That was one of his plays as well in terms of the decarbonisation play, I guess. Yeah. So that was quite interesting. Nickel Industries, Liontown Resources, Boss Energy, all looking good as well. And I'll just tell you, it was Ray David from Blackwater Partners.
There you go. Now, Worley, we already talked about that. Was one of the worst performers, so that block trade executed Tuesday morning. Ampol, we mentioned it as well. It was out with its quarterly update, and the market not liking the update coming through there. As you can see, some selling again in the wake of Megaport's results, although some of the commentary pretty positive, saying that the shift to higher value products is encouraging and showing that KPI progress should continue. That was Macquarie's take on Megaport, being that its shift to high value will continue. Telix Pharmaceuticals and GUD Holdings rounding out the laggards.
All right, in the small end of town, let's have a look. Oh, Serco, I just spoke to the CEO, that new five-year deal with Booking.com, so they were up by 19%. Bowen Coal, Carnaby Resource, Pacific Smiles in the dental space.
Yeah, Pacific Smiles got another offer put on the table for it just yesterday, so the market digesting that. Flip the page. And PointsBet, whoa, PBH, what's going on there? Let me just quickly check it out. It was down by 37%. Okay, it's trading ex-dividend. That explains it. Mm-hmm. And Elixir Energy, Aries Resources, Ardera Resources, and Australian Vanadium down as well.
All right, let's have a look at what is happening overnight. The US Employment Cost Index, Central Bank Consumer Confidence, Canada, GDP, and CPI flash estimates. That never gets old when I do that to you, does it?
The big ones, though, that we'll be watching out for coming from US earnings, look at Amazon. That will pull a lot of focus. You know, the tech results, I guess you could exclude Meta from that, have been going pretty well. And so we'll see if that continues with Amazon. Look for any commentary about the cloud as well with Amazon Web Services. And also, you know, any commentary around AI and how that's going.
But big ones there too, right? Eli Lilly, the weight loss drugs, McDonald's on the other end of the spectrum. All right, let's have a look at what's coming up tomorrow.
Oops.
A lot of text one, text two. New Zealand unemployment earnings and earnings, unemployment numbers, I should say, and earnings from Amcor and Mirvac Group.
Yeah, looking forward to that. You know, you were getting some meaty stuff coming in terms of just quarterlies that we can hang our hats on. And then it just made me remember that we've got the Macquarie conference coming up toward the end of May. You know, we're almost in May. And so we'll start getting some potential confessions ahead of earnings season coming from that one.
Actually, May starts tomorrow.
Oh my
crazy.
Gosh.
So early in May. Let's hope that doesn't happen. Anyway, let's look at where we are at the end of April. It is the end of April,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's the 30th.
Up by a third of 1% there on the CBO 200 and the ASX 200 up 27 points, a third of 1%, 7,664. My goodness, that month went very, very quickly.
Yeah. Look, we have some great interviews online from today. Seneca Financial Solutions, Ben Richards, you spoke with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was talking about the Anglo BHP tie-up and how to play it in the small cap space.
Yeah, really good. And Paul Bloxham, the interview that you referenced there, I'd be interested. I'll go back and have a listen. I was occupied at that time just because, you know, he just reading his note today, even he was saying, look, he wasn't for sure calling a rate hike coming from the RBA, but he definitely was indicating it's a possibility. Tomorrow, Juliet, you know, another day of really great guests coming up. We've got James Garrish, who will be joining us for Market Matters, and Shaw & Partners at 10 to get us through stock specifics, and then small caps as well with them. Yeah, we'll talk to a number of small caps, actually, so you'll have to tune in to see.
All right, we will see you tomorrow. Have a good evening.
The COB is brought to you by Pepperstone, trusted by traders in over 160 countries.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.